I had almost quit. I had had a lot of things happen to me and harassment, and I was barely hanging on by a thread. I thought I had made the wrong decision, even just going into my trade.
When you say harassment, are you saying just other people in the trade, men or like?
Yeah, I mean, I stepped foot on the floor. I had not only a gender gap, I also had an age gap of at least 10 years. I had massive generational gaps just in learning.
Any clue how important blue-collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist.
This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast.
Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Jennifer Green is Director of Competitions and Young Women's Initiatives at Skills Ontario, an organization dedicated to promoting skilled trades and technologies among youth. Jennifer's journey in the skilled trades began when she transitioned from a path in forensic criminology to becoming a licensed industrial mechanic millwright, a field where she has made significant strides as a pioneer for women. Not only has Jennifer achieved remarkable success in her trade, but she has also dedicated herself to advocating for young women in non-traditional careers, working hard to create opportunities, events, and competitions that inspire and prepare the next generation of skilled trades professionals. She is also one of construction's most influential people of 2024. Welcome, Jennifer, to the show.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start off with a quote, and it's one of your quotes. Books broaden our worldview, and children's books are a thing of beauty. This is how I was introduced to you, Jennifer, when you made that post, and that post just kind of blew up on LinkedIn. How important are children's books to kids for construction?
Books and those posts. I love being unique, outside the box, coming up with different ideas, staying out of the norm. And I have two young children, 10 and 12, and my son has joked around. So both me and my husband are tradespeople. My husband's a general machinist by trade, and I'm an industrial millwright for a trade. And we do a lot of our own home projects as much as possible. And we try to include our kids. And our 12-year-old son says, I like the quiet trades. He likes to do drywall and plastering. He likes the plastering part. But our daughter, who's now 10, is like all about the power tools. She is right into it, trying every single one. When we redid our kitchen and when we redid parts of our garage, she was like up there. She wanted to be on the ladder. She wanted to be using them. We do a lot of reading. We have our own mini like at-home library for Advent calendars. We still do like the fun little like $2 chocolate thing from Walmart. But for the longest time for Advent, I would go to thrift stores and I would buy 24 books for each child every year. And every day they got a book. And I really, really loved it because it created an at-home library and a whole slew of different books that like they would never see before. And I of course, tried to focus on like holiday books and stuff like that. And it made me realize that you don't see anything or very little when it comes to hands-on or like Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs. You don't see any of that. I started putting some time and research into it. And I generally wake up before my husband and I want him to sleep. And I also don't want to get out of bed. So I'll sit on my phone and research in the morning. It spun into this. There are skilled trades books, but they're not advertised. They're hard to find or they're not in necessarily the big stores. And the more and more I researched, it was hard to find them. But once you were able to extrapolate them, I created these skilled trades children's book lists. And I filtered it all through LinkedIn over several posts. You're right. They exploded. I have had people reach out to me from Jamaica, from the UK, from Australia, coming in from all over the place. I found a very young tradeswoman who just launched her book maybe a few months ago now from Australia. And I randomly found her in this research. And it was really exciting because like she had no idea who I was and I didn't really know who she was, but she had a post about the day her book was launching. So I chose to highlight her book in one of the lists on the same day her book launched. And it's been really interesting for the amount of authors that I have met, especially throughout North America, that now we are in the same skilled trades network. And even some of them reached out and said their book sales started to skyrocket. I heard from a veteran in California who was very well connected to three local school boards who reached out to me and said, I've never seen anything like this before. He's like, I took your post and I sent it to the school boards. And he said, we have leftover budget. And almost every book in the first couple of book lists is in every elementary school in three school boards in California now. So it was really touching and heartfelt in my very long explanation of this, because I didn't realize you were going to touch home on this particular thing. And I'm so passionate and excited about it that there was so much offspring. And Angela Caldwell from Honor the Work up here in Ontario, she's taken them now and she's created packages that she puts out to schools. And I've heard that TD wants to maybe do something, and all these different offsprouts and offshoots and schools that now have them in the libraries. It was a really, really intricate and passionate little mini movement.
I am a big believer of having your kids play with your tools under supervision. The younger the kids can be exposed to work, like you said, your daughter is helping or your son is helping around the house, they're seeing what they can do with their hands and they're watching you. You don't realize that your kids are sponges. They take so much in. And I try to, when I'm doing something around the house, I have my son next to me. He gets excited and then he gets the confidence about possibly working with his hands or using a particular tool. And I remember this as a kid myself, working with my father in the garage. He was paneling, wood paneling the garage. He probably shouldn't have been doing it. I actually remember at the end, he was putting in the last or the second to last nail. He like took his eye off for a quick second and he smacked his finger and he hurt his finger. And I remember that. Of course, that was from a safety perspective, but I just remember working with him around the house and it got me interested sort of in me working with my hands. On top of also these books that come out, my kids, they also have a lot of construction books themselves. I try to get them books and get them interested in books that have applications of how you built this building or built a bridge or built a tunnel, just to get them interested. But that's the way you get kids excited about working with their hands. And maybe, just maybe, that percentage starts to go up for them that they might go down a trades route. You come from, I believe, more of a blue collar background, right? Your family was in sort of the trades.
I'm fourth generation skilled tradesperson.
So you had that growing up surrounding you. How much of that is an impact?
Yes and no. So we're going into the stigmas and the stereotypes here, where I was an A plus student. I was going into academia. And because I got the grades and because I could, for lack of a term, do it all, I was a jock, I was an academic, I was a tradie, I was this. I fit into all the little niches. I just liked doing everything. And so I did. But because the grades were in that point and because I was getting through, that was the path that was pushed at me. And you noted about originally I was fast tracking all my courses. I still love forensic criminology to this day. And that's what I was going to go into. And while although my father is a tool and die maker and his father before him, it's in my family, but not really talked about, definitely not really pushed. You're not exactly seen of the father figure pushing his daughter 20 years ago as a teenager to go into one of the most male dominated trades out there. That's what I mean by it was there, but it was not there. And that's nothing against family or anything like that. That was just and is sometimes still the way that it is. Where I even went with my father to grade 9 take your kid to work day up here in Ontario. And I actually got to spend a day in the shop with him. Now, granted, all I did was chamfer the edges of probably every die in the shop, but it gave me that experience and I loved tech. And I took it as a course, but as a bird course. It was easy to fly through for me. It got my grades higher for my university application. So it was always there, but not there because that's not what was pushed to you. And it wasn't until something big happened in high school where that change finally happened and I ended up going down this path.
Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, the people who don't know that, and it's funny, and we were talking before the show about Jamie McMillan, and Jamie McMillan gave me the skilled trades card game for the people who are looking on video. It introduces really kids to the trades, And it's a specialized program in high school that allows you to explore apprenticeships and consider careers in the skilled trades. And when I found out about that, I sort of went down the rabbit hole and I spoke to them, a representative from OEAP directly. And I was just baffled that you can do that in high school. In the States, it's not like that. Career exploration is probably one of the biggest barriers here in the States. Even if you have this mechanical ability or this technical spark that you are good with your hands, guidance counselors here are not sitting down with kids and saying, yeah, you're really good with your hands. You could be a welder or a plumber. They're pushing college. How has OEAP helped you? Because I believe you went through it when you were coming up.
I did. So it's a unique program. And I mean, it starts with the word Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, and it allows you to become a registered apprentice while still in high school, earning high school credits during high school hours. So when I decided to make the switch and I tried cooperative education first, you have to take co-op first, make sure that you enjoy that exploratory piece, and then have a company willing to actually sign you. In the summer between grade 11 and grade 12, my company said that they would take me from my co-op, and I became a signed registered apprentice as a grade 12 student. So I had a two-course OEAP. So every morning was my OEAP course. So I was earning my credits in the morning every day for all of grade 12 and earning my hours. So for a millwright, my apprenticeship hours are 8,000 hours of hands-on just for my C of A, for the certificate of apprenticeship. So every hour that I worked in high school went towards my OSSD, my Ontario secondary diploma. It also went towards my apprenticeship hours. It's a 2-for-1 special, so to say. But what it meant was that the day I graduated, I had a full-time job. I was already a first-year apprentice, and I just walked out the door and kept going. So that's one of the really great things, is that you have employers who are looking for those grassroots, who are willing and wanting to sign up and take high school students to be able to get your foot in the door. Because it really is hard to find an apprenticeship if you're just out there looking on your own. So it's a really great opportunity to have your foot in the door and you are able to run through that door. It ultimately allowed me to have my license by the age of 21 because I was able to start right away and have those hours in high school. So it was a real game changer. My husband went through it as well. We actually went to high school together, and several other students who did OEAP in the same year as us. And I'm actually the first female to be signed as an OEAP student for my school board as well.
I mean, that program, and I just said it before, it's just unreal that kids can get involved early. And did you go to college directly?
I did as well. So I did my apprenticeship, so those 8,000 hours. And then I also went to college for a 3-year program on what's called day release. So I go to work every other day, and then I go to school one day a week throughout the school year, Conestoga College. So I have college paperwork, and then I also have my certificate of apprenticeship. And then when I wrote and got my license, I also have a certificate of qualifications.
Are you seeing more women come through that program than years prior? Are you seeing that percentage higher than it was? Obviously, maybe it's more predominantly men, but are you seeing more women come through?
Still is, yes. It's still in the top 10 most male-dominated trades. But when I started 20 years ago, only 1% of women were in millwrighting across Canada, and today it's just over 3%. In Ontario alone, though, we do have a record high amount of people. So we have over 91,000 registered apprentices in Ontario right now. As well, we have 1.3 million people in trades and affiliated careers in Ontario. So we are at record numbers. As well, we have a government who is backing trades, the first government to really back the skilled trades ever. We have our Ministry of Labor, Immigration, Training, and Skills Development is literally putting their money where their mouth is, and they are helping and pushing. And I say that as well because in 2020, 2021, I was appointed chair of an advisory committee to the minister on helping create a plan for an accessible apprenticeship system for youth in Ontario. I had a committee of people, and our final report yielded $90 million towards skilled trades in Ontario over 3 years. That's just one project of many that our government is pushing for. They've pushed hard and made new mandates for cleaner washrooms on construction sites and for women. And they're continuing to evolve and put more and new items out there to help promote skilled trades. For example, we talked about career exploration. Did you know that Ontario has 144 registered trades? Over 50 of them are in construction alone. So there's a vast amount of registered careers out there, but it's trying to explain what they are. Everybody knows what is in their daily life. You know what a doctor is because you have to physically go to a doctor. But when you wake up every day, Andrew, do you wake up to an alarm clock? It gets charged from the power in your house. Who did that? An electrician. How does the power get to your house? From a power line technician. But who explains that along the way to you? Even though that's in your daily life, that's not explained. But you know exactly what the doctor is because you physically go to the doctor and know what that is.
I was speaking in front of 300 kids a handful of months ago, actually with Jamie McMillan in New Jersey. I said to my kids, I said, how do I get young kids' attention? Because I have to speak briefly in front of these 300 students, and my kids will start talking about games, screens, Xbox, cell phone. I got up and I started saying, how many kids play Roblox? How many kids play Fortnite? These are all different types of games. And they started laughing. And then I made sort of an analogy that, you know what would happen if the power went out, or who supports the internet connection? It's the people in the trades. And I was speaking to a technical school. So these kids were coming up in the trades. I was merging it sort of together. And it just was impactful to the kids. I was giving a real world example. And I was trying to make it funny because of games. That's the thing, is that everything that you take for granted, like you said, turning on the lights, flushing the toilet, taking a shower, and everything in between is what the skilled trades do every day. And I always say they are the backbone of the economy. And we never give them, quote unquote, the recognition that they deserve in the work that they deserve. It's more just, my plumber came over and they fixed the plumbing. My HVAC person came over and they fixed the heating or the cooling. Oh, thank you so much. Like, these are the people that keep us running. Or when the power goes out and the linemen are in the bucket truck and they're running side by side with emergency workers. That's what people don't really realize out there.
It's misconceptions and the stereotypes and the stigmas and understanding what goes into that, what people define an academic or academia as. I mean, now go and compare it to an entrepreneur. Look at all the other back-end stuff that they have to do that you might not think about, of just the simplicity of paperwork and filing and keeping a business alive. There is all of that piece in there. And there is still schooling, and it's very intricate. And one of the things that I work really hard towards is, again, like you said, relatability. What can you tie into what is important to them today to get across to them? And I'm really big on metaphors. When I ask people who knows what a millwright is, most people don't know. You might be able to put two and two together from its like old school term of mill, but there's a metaphor for it to help describe. And the metaphor is, we are doctors of machines. If you can come up with a metaphor to explain it, the story to go with the metaphor is, let's say you're a soccer player, Andrew. You break your leg during a game. You want to go back and play soccer as quickly as possible. Let's pretend you're like a 17-year-old kid again. Like, you want to get back out there, competitive, let's go, right? But you can't. You have a process to go through. You're going to have to go to the doctor. They're going to have to examine you. They've determined it's probably broken. You're going for an ultrasound, an X-ray, maybe an MRI. That's me as the machine, doctor. Except you're screaming, ow, and in pain, and they're poking and they're prodding. You can tell them where it hurts and where it doesn't. Machine can't tell me that. I have to be able to learn to understand code and be able to read IOs and figure out alarms. The machine's not telling me it's hurt. It might just flash. It might just stop working. I have to troubleshoot it. I have to use equipment and machines to troubleshoot, which is the MRI, the ultrasound, and the X-ray. They've determined your leg is broken. You need surgery. Maybe you need a pin and a plate. Let's say I've determined the gearbox is shattered. I am now the surgeon. The surgeon for you would go in, repair your leg, put it back together. For me, I have to rip the machine apart, get the gearbox out, rebuild the gearbox, and then put it back together. Your surgery is now complete. You got to get back into shape. You're going to physio. That's still my job. I have to make sure that the machine is running back the same way it was. I have to troubleshoot it. I have to test it. Sometimes I have to realign it. I have to make sure it's still working in the same order or better than what it was beforehand. Physio is to get you back as quickly as possible into shape so you can get back on the soccer field. For a millwright, it's to make sure that that machine is running as quickly as possible again in the best working order. In my case, it could be tens of thousands of millions of dollars depending on how long that machine is down for. It needs to make money. It needs to make parts. It needs to go back into production. You just want to go back and get out and play soccer and not be on crutches anymore. Finding a metaphor that people, not just kids, people can relate to explains things in an instant.
That is probably one of the best descriptions I've ever heard to describe a trait. And that, I'm sure you've been asked plenty of times throughout your career, well, what's a millwright? And that's a great way, like you said, not only kids, but adults be like, oh, now I get it.
Everyone thinks it's kids. It's not, though. It's everybody. If you are not within the skilled trades community, you likely are not aware. And that's nothing against you. But we have to find a way to be able to explain things. And so I really appreciate your comment. I've worked really hard on that metaphor, tweaked it and gone through it and same thing. So my analogy, once upon a time ago, used to be alarm clock. Now I've been able to easily change it into cell phone. That goes to show you right there the timeline of me using that metaphor as well.
Going back to your days, obviously, earlier on being a millwright, how much did the Skills Ontario competition, or at least winning it, propel you in your career?
Man, before being employed here, I was a volunteer for 15 years, in and out through different programs, through the Young Women's Department, camps, competitions, you name it. It's funny because I was actually involved with Skills Ontario before I competed. As being signed as the first female OEP student in my school board and being in one of the most male-dominated trades, I really stuck out like a sore thumb. I realized and learned how to use it to my advantage. If I'm already sticking out like a sore thumb, might as well stick out a whole heck of a lot more. Use it to my advantage. And I got picked up in grade 12 to do a keynote for Skills Ontario for their Women in Trades program. And again, I talked about how I was an academic. I did public speaking competitions for fun. I enjoyed them. So I was already doing public speaking, just not in that capacity. So I actually started working with Skills for that, for young women's, in doing mentorship and keynotes. In my third year of apprenticeship, Conestoga College asked me to represent them in the provincial competition. I laughed and said, no. I said, are you crazy? I had almost quit. I had had a lot of things happen to me and harassment, and I was barely hanging on by a thread. I thought I had made the wrong decision, even just going into my trade.
When you say harassment, are you saying just other people in the trade, men or like?
Yeah, I mean, I stepped foot on the floor. I had not only a gender gap, I also had an age gap of at least 10 years. I had massive generational gaps just in learning. Majority of people that I worked with in my career on the tools had never, ever worked with a woman before. So there was a lot of things to sort through, but I ended up coming up with my plan was 50-50. I am here to stay. I'm not leaving. You need to accept that in some sort of form or capacity, and I will meet you 50% of the way. You meet me 50%, I will meet you 50%. I also have to be cognizant. This is a big thing for you, especially if maybe you've been in the trades for 30 years. This could be very, very new for you too. It's a learning adjustment for everybody, which just that alone right there stems into so many other pieces that I have touched and talked upon on making policy change and changes within our apprenticeship system on how we train people, especially generational, and being able to work closely and accepting of underrepresented groups in making sure that everybody is involved. So you name it. Yep. It was there. I was struggling. I was really struggling. So when the college asked me to represent them, I just laughed and said, no, I'm not willing to put myself out there on a provincial stage. What if I come in last? I don't have the confidence. It just wasn't there. I give my faculty a lot of credit for this. They pulled me aside and had a really frank conversation with me and said, okay, we actually chose you. We chose you for a reason. We believe that you can do this, that you could win this. They said, we had other students volunteer who wanted to compete. You didn't volunteer, but we're coming to you. They saw something in me that I certainly did not see in myself at the time. And there were no mentorship groups. Like right now, there's well over 30 between sectors and trades. And there's so many opportunities to reach out to different women's support groups now. There weren't any at the time. There was nobody for me to touch base on. And it was really a big learning curve as well in trying to find somebody, which I did end up finding a male mentor who really helped along the way. His name was John, and he saved me. I made a deal with faculty and said, okay, build my confidence. Help me feel comfortable to go out and do this in front of tens of thousands of people watching as spectators and putting myself out on the stage. And they agreed. They took extra time to come in after hours to train me. So I give Conestoga College a lot of kudos for that, for those teachers. yeah, they saw something in me that I didn't, because I ended up winning gold for provincials. I ended up being on Team Ontario and went on to the Stills Canada National Competition and competed as the second woman ever in that contest and walked away with silver. The energy boost of respect it gave me, don't get me wrong, I still had to really prove myself as a woman, but things changed overnight. All of a sudden, people looked at me and they're like, oh, she can do it. Just that alone, it launched and changed so many things for me and gave me the opportunity to learn how to have thick skin and stand up for myself and feel confident even in myself that like I can do it, not alone just others seeing she can do it if she won nationally.
That's a lot of pressure. I would imagine the night before, it's a sleepless night. Like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Am I going to do well? But the thing is, what you were saying is that you found a mentor, John helped you, right? You prepped and you worked at it. So even if, let's say, you didn't do well, you put a lot of time, effort, and work into it. But it's amazing that you were able to come in first place. And then that side of it, the competition, is that very similar to the Skills USA Championship here in the US?
Exactly. So there's World Skills, an international organization that has 87 member countries involved, and Skills USA is one of them. So there's Skills USA on the national level, and then the different states has a skills organization as well. Same thing up here in Canada. We have Skills Competence Canada, and then each of the 13 provinces and territories also have a member organization. So in this case, for Skills Ontario, there's also a Skills British Columbia, a Skills Nunavut, a Skills PEI. Each of the provinces and territories come together at nationals to compete on a national stage. And then every 2 years for us is qualifying to make Team Canada to go and compete at World Skills. So Team Canada right now, we have 3 Ontario competitors who will be going to Lyon, France this September to compete at World Skills, which is the Olympics for skilled trades. It runs in the exact same fashion, like competitor villages, opening ceremony, closing ceremony, days of competition. And you noted earlier about the pressure. When I came to Skills as an employee in competitions, it is a small area that I had focused on in a project of, it's not just about your skill set. It's not just about getting a medal. It doesn't matter what you place in, the amount of time, effort, training that you have put in for this competition makes you all the better tradesperson, gives you an advantage over others, whether it is in job hunting because you've got it on your resume or in just this new skill sets that you've learned, but also the mental component. You have to think about all the other things. Forget about your trade for a moment. What else affects you in that kind of environment? And I say that because we just had a record year. We just held our provincial competition. We're always the first Monday and Tuesday in the first full week of May every year. Over 2 days, we had 2,681 competitors this year, competing in over 75 contests, and we had 47,000 spectators over 2 days. Just that alone. We're the largest skilled trades event in Canada. But let's say you're a student or an apprentice practicing in your classroom. You're used to what? Maybe 30, 50 people walking by you, and now you're thrust into this environment with tens of thousands of people walking by you, and it's nerve-wracking. So we created a preparation guide for competitors and teachers. What do you need to know outside the contest itself? We also introduced mental health training this year, mental health for sports. And they came in and did analogies and training and breathing for competitors, for their advisors, for our 857 volunteers. We also introduced that because it's a lot to take in. It's not just the contest. There's a lot of other things, but all of that training helps you so much more in your daily life as well. So we've really taken a focus and broadened it outside the box of just skilled trades. What else do you need for the competition and in your life to help get you and filter you through?
I like what you said with the for the Olympics for the skilled trades. And I am actually going down to Skills USA. It's actually later this month in Georgia, which I'll be going down. This is the first time I'll be going, but I'm super excited to see all the kids and all the different competitions and speak to different people, because it's amazing to have all those people who are advocates for the trades under one roof. And now to know what's really going on behind the scenes, there is this sense of pride if you win a competition. I remember being in one of the technical schools and they had Skills USA champion in one of the shops. And it was just like a focal point to see like, wow, that's a huge achievement, especially for an individual, which, like you said, it's a resume builder that you won this competition. And it gives you the confidence that you worked under pressure and you were able to excel in your field. It's wonderful to see.
Industry knows what these competitions are like. They know that it is industry and education and curriculum built projects and how difficult they are and what it takes to train and learn for them. Industry understands that and supports it. I give you examples of, like, some of our sponsors are 3M. Mazda donates 20 cars for kids to work on. Tormont Cat, Strongco donates, and Kubota and John Deere and Vermont all give equipment for heavy service. IHSA up here installs power line poles into ceilings and boulevards for kids to climb on. Haas, like F1, donates CNC machines and lends them in kind for kids to be able to do their projects. It's millions of dollars of in kind. And what I just listed is like the smallest little amount of a huge sector of industry supporting. And that's from our provincial competition. And I mean, like, we've got 30 different. So in here in Ontario, we work with 72 school boards, 12 of them Francophone. We work with 24 of the public Ontario colleges. And on top of that, we also work with an additional 30 union training delivery agents of locals who send competitors and private colleges. They're also all involved, the unions, in helping put on competitions. What does the province need? What are the schools and unions doing and requiring? Who is their sponsors for? And what can we add to this to help build skilled trades, to help fill the gap in the province and within Canada? And where else can we add for opportunities for youth within the province?
Here in the States, there are 330,000 welders needed by 2028. We need 80,000 electricians every single year up to 2028 just to replace the electricians that are leaving the industry. We need 550,000 plumbers by 2028. We know there's shortages in the US, but all the programs and everything that you're throwing at the shortage, are you seeing an impact? Are you seeing more kids get into the trades, or is there still a heavy shortage? What are you seeing out there?
So that number that I noted earlier of 91,000 registered apprentices, that's a record high. We also have a record high amount of female apprentices signing up. The numbers are climbing on programs and advocacy. And again, what this ministry is doing for us, what this government is doing for us. And I say us as in skilled trades community. One of the things that I am very proud of, I noted that report earlier from the youth advisors a few years ago. I think we had 27 recommendations. One of them was a mandatory PA day for guidance educators on skilled trades that was released and announced last year. Another one, which I am very excited and very proud and will be launching this September 2024 for the new school year, is introductory trades and tech is coming back for grade 9 and 10 in the Ontario curriculum. So every student now, no matter which path, will be going through an introductory tech course in grade 9 or 10. So this will just help people in general. I mean, you look at the amount of students graduating who are having trouble doing their finances or cooking. They can't change a light bulb. Simplicity of even just life skills, even outside of the skilled trades and looking at that pathway. Having the grade 9, 10 introductory tech come back to the Ontario curriculum is going to be a massive step, and it's launching this September.
None of my friends know how to screw in a light bulb, yet change out a dimmer in their kids' room or something, like basic stuff. They won't even attempt it. There's always a conversation and text going on, like, who do you know to do this? I always kind of chuckle on the side because there's always feedback from them. Oh, I called 3 times to the plumber or electrician. They didn't call me back. I said, they have tons of jobs. They can pick and choose the jobs they want and make the money they want. And they don't get it. I always say, and that's why I titled this The Lost Art of the Skilled Trades. There is a lost art that people are coming out of school not knowing how to do stuff, not learning how to read a tape measure or swing a hammer. In the States, it was shop class. It was a requirement to take a shop class, to learn how to build something, to work with tools. And I think that was one of the biggest issues here that really kind of sent the skilled trades, among other things, downhill, because we were just kind of pushing people into a 4-year college degree. Shop class is not even on the docket. It's not. You can take a technical path and go to a technical school. But if you're in high school, you're not taking a shop class. I didn't take a shop class years back. I don't remember working by hands. The only time I remember working by hands, when I was in camp, there was a wood shop that I took wood shop, and you had to make a knock hockey set, which is like a hockey set in wood. And you had to play the person who ran the shop. And if you lost, he would take the set. And I remember that. That's the only time that I was really exposed to it, other than that.
Yeah, like the Ontario curriculum is also reintroducing skilled trades and tech in the elementary curriculum as well. So there's components being introduced throughout all the younger grades as well. And again, us as an organization for Skills Ontario, the competition, we actually have provincial competitions going as low as for grades 4 to 6 and 7 to 8, where it's relatable to them. So we have Lego engineering and Lego robotics. We also have technology. We have construction. We have TV and video. We have animation. So we also have contests at those grassroots where we're at the level where they are being introduced to it with the new curriculum. And these contests have been here well before I was employed here. But having the new curriculum will help push it even more. And we're looking at different ways. What else can we offer at a provincial level for elementary as well at those grassroots, especially again, with all these changes in curriculum with skilled trades coming on board. We actually have a new program that launched during the pandemic called Junk Drawer Races. And it's based off of consumables and recyclables. What can you build? And it's all 100% tied to the Ontario curriculum for each of the different grades. So teachers can do it in their classrooms. We provide a lesson plan, including a breakdown of the skilled trades of the new curriculum to help teachers integrate it because it's new to them as well. And it's all virtual. So it's almost for free, or maybe up to $10 or $20 per group of four. They can video record it, do the documents, and send them into us. And then it's a provincial competition done in person in the classrooms with all of our documentation. But you also have a chance to win provincial medals. So we've even looked at different ways to integrate and help provide learning plans and lessons on skilled trades tied to the curriculum.
So you guys are doing a much better job up there. And I wish that we can kind of bring this into the States. I mean, that's the model right there, that your government is investing into the trades. The tides are turning here because these articles are starting to come out here in the States. The Wall Street Journal just had an article about the tool belt generation is Gen Z. New York Post just had a snippet about the skilled trades. That's starting to come out and it's starting to catch fire. And there's an excitement here, down here, that generation is starting to look at college and the cost of college versus going a trades path and not running into debt. But we still need to do, I go back to the career exploration, we still need something in schools to give kids a secondary option like the trades.
Oh, I don't think we should say secondary option. We should say all options, not secondary.
Thank you for that. I have these posters that you can't see around here, and there is an organization called Explore the Trades. And Kate Cimino is on my foundation, the Skilled Trades Advisory Council. And she puts these posters, her organization puts posters into schools, and it gives the path of a plumber, a path of a welder, and shows the money that you can make. Then she sends that out to guidance counselors, and guidance counselors can put that up so kids can be intrigued, especially when they're sitting down with the guidance counselor. Those type of programs and those things that you need to do to keep somebody's interest in the trades. The other pushback here, and I don't know if you're seeing this as well, is parents. Even though the kids are interested in a trade, the parents are saying, whoa, wait a second. We thought you were going to college. Why are you working with hands? Also on top of some parents are coming home who are in the trade saying, I have to work my hands so you don't have to. How much are you seeing that?
Goes back to that stigma and the stereotype. And you just noted Gen Z's. And although things are coming through, you've got different perceptions of also different generations. So when talking to students, you also need to be able to find a way to talk to parents. And so there's a lot of organizations, including ourselves and OEAP and CHISM within the actual school systems, who hold events for parents and guardians to also explain and let them know and try to break that stigma and stereotype that this is a valuable career to go in. It's not a, and I'm going to point this out jokingly, it's not a secondary option. This is a first choice, valuable option to go into that can make very good money. That does have, like I said, my 8,000 hours of schooling on top of my college is more than a university degree of how much time I spent going through my trade. So they are valuable first choice career options. And there was a young woman who I started mentoring about 10 years ago. I met her by chance. She volunteered at her high school to run a skilled trades information event. And I was one of the people brought in to present for manufacturing. And her and I met, and she told me how she was stuck between millwrighting and auto mechanic. And one of her main issues wasn't deciding going into the trades or which of the two she wanted. Her main concern was how much her parents were against her going in the trades based on their perceptions and misconceptions. And so we met quite a bit. We went to dinner several times. And every time it was, how do we talk to her parents? What should we say? What is the plan? Let's review her concerns and where she's nervous and let's write it out and make up a plan. I was going to talk to her parents with her as a support system, as a mentor for her, and just sit in the background. I ended up not needing to do that. She ended up doing it on her own. And based on the plan, she was able to explain to her parents, this is a stigma. It is a stereotype. This isn't what you understand it to be. And she was able to go through it successfully. She is a licensed industrial mechanic millwright now, thriving, loving her job. And she too is also a mentor now and doing advocacy and public speaking.
It takes work in some cases. It takes convincing. And it's like it's that old stigma about the trades where, oh yeah, why would you want to work with your hands? I always say that some people say it's like an option B. It's for the bad kids, but that's all a bunch of BS. I mean, that's what people used to think about that. I think that obviously that stigma is certainly changing. Wages has always been an issue. Wherever I go on social media, it doesn't matter if I'm Instagram, TikTok, not so much LinkedIn, YouTube. The younger generation is saying, why would I want to do that? I can't make much money in the trades. I can go in and work for fast food. I can be a social media influencer. Why would I want to put myself through that? Wage-wise for a millwright, if you're a handful of years in and you're in the right role, what kind of money do you see as a millwright?
A lot of companies will have a wage matrix where when you're hired on as a first-year apprentice, you're guaranteed this dollar amount per hour, and then a second year, a third year, and then when you're licensed, and then it goes up from there. Every company does it differently, but one of the really great things about millwrights is the overtime. You can make quite a bit of money within that. And I say that because, for example, where I worked, I was automotive. They're always working. It's 24/7 for the most part. But a really neat thing about millwrights is they're everywhere. You could work in any kind of industry. If there's a machine, there's a millwright. And the great thing about it is that we are also a red sealed trade. What that means in Canada is I can travel anywhere in the entire country and not have to be recertified. Why? Because a bearing is a bearing. A motor is a motor. It doesn't matter what application it's in. It still does the same function, just in a different way for something different. And I explain that because a roller coaster is a machine. It still has motors and bearings and wheels and everything. Did you know that millwrights are at Canada's Wonderland? Christie Cookies, machines that make cookies, or other products, Johnson & Johnson. They all have machines that make the products or that make and bottle them. You still have to have someone that fix them. Millwrights are in demand everywhere. One example specifically on wages, there is a young man who I just traveled with to Team Ontario. He's in the last year of his program. He was competing in welding. And he was explaining to me about the job that he has already and that he was already making over $100,000. Now, he does everything from welding to metal 3D printing. This young man was extremely impressive, and I could not believe what he was telling me that he's already done in the beginning of his career. And he had told me that he was already making over $100,000. Just to kind of give you an example of they're out there. It's, again, getting past the stigmas, the stereotypes, the misconceptions, understanding what is available and out there, and getting yourself into what you can. One of the pieces of advice that I've always told to people is always say yes. Do not turn down an opportunity, even if you're not going to get paid for it. If you have an opportunity that sets you apart from somebody else, whether it's on your resume or it's just one skill, one small skill set experience that you have different from somebody else, it gives you an advantage. Say yes. Take the free experience, whether you are being paid or not. Grab as much as you can and put it under your tool belt to make you stick out like a sore thumb, to make you different from everybody else.
That sounds easy. I would do that if I was coming up in the trades. I don't think everybody is willing to do that. And especially with this generation, And I had this conversation with a very well-known welder, Nate Bowman, and we were talking about taking some crap jobs in the beginning just to be a sponge, or you're not making much money, or if, like you said, not making any money, but getting the experience. So it's called delayed gratification, right? A lot of kids want, what am I going to be paid tomorrow? Versus, you know what? I could put 3 years into this, and in year three or four, I can really do well in year three or four. But I don't know if everybody is willing to put the time and effort and wait for the gratification a few years later. I know I can do that, and maybe you can do that. I don't know if everybody can do that.
It's a different mindset, and it's the way everybody is raised on instant gratification. If it's not explained to you on how it benefits you, you're not going to know that coming up in the world. And I say that because I was an industrial millwright, but at the same time, I built a whole secondary career on volunteering and advocacy. And I built these two careers at the same time. And I was being paid for the millwright one, but not the other one. The other one was me, vacation time, doing keynotes and workshops and events, and just saying yes to as much as I could and building a network to surround myself in the skilled trades community and getting my name out there. You don't become a professional speaker overnight. You're not earning money doing your first couple of gigs. You have to build yourself, build a brand, build a reputation. And that was a lot of my career at the same time as my millwright career, was building this whole secondary piece of two options to build myself into what I wanted to go as. But if you don't explain to somebody how that benefits you and when and where and why, it's not necessarily understood, because that's not the way that people are raised today, for lack of a term.
Do you feel you were wired up like that, or do you feel that came from upbringing? Because if it's not spoken about in your household, sometimes people are just doers. No one needs to tell me, I just do it. Was it from a mentor, or is it from parents? Where do you get that from?
Definitely some of it started at home. I mean, like, my parents were tough, but in like a really great way. They taught me to be really independent. And then stemming off of that, I had to prove myself. As a woman in trades, I constantly had to live up to people's expectations. And it became my goal is to, I'm going to prove you wrong, and I'm going to do better than that. A motto of mine was go big or go home. And I mean, there's another podcast where they actually ended up titling it that. It was just this urge and this push that I want to make things the most efficient and the most effective way that they can be. That is how I live for my team, for my department, is how can we all have a good time, enjoy our jobs, make our jobs easier, and do the best that we can be and continually improve? Taking like that motto, again, it was the push of constantly had to prove myself. So fine, I will. And I'm going to do even better than that. So it really drove me, and it continued with me throughout my career, to just try to push to be the best that I can be.
What is the perfect age to speak to a young individual that they can sort of grasp the concept about sort of the trades? Where do you think that sweet spot is age-wise?
Grassroots, I would say conversations really should start to happen at like grade 4. Students have already made up their minds by the time grade 7 and 8 happens. Talking to them in grade 7 and 8 and 9 through 12, don't get me wrong, there's going to be a lot of students who still haven't made a choice, but it's starting to get a little bit late. You should still talk to them at that time. But again, we talked about doctors earlier. Everybody knows what a doctor is because it's in your daily life. You actually interact with a doctor. Again, looking at my 10-year-old daughter, she's in grade 4. She already has exactly ideas of what she wants to do in life. And she thankfully has the opportunity to be involved in hands-on and tools. So she already has lots of ideas on what she wants to do for her career. Lots of people will think that's too young, but being able to just introduce it. It's one of the reasons why we worked on a skilled trades alphabet book to be published by Skills Ontario. It's in the curriculum, ABCs. Great. Let's talk about which skilled trades fall under the ABCs. Just about the introduction of the careers that people don't know are available and out there, especially as a registered trade in Ontario.
I was at a school not too long ago here in the States. It's called the Williamson College of the Trades. And it takes in young men who come from tough backgrounds, and they put them through a 3-year program. It's tuition free. You learn a trade and you learn soft skills, and to be respectable, you have to have a jacket and tie. And I watched 85 students graduate, already have multiple offers in different trades, and they come out debt free. And I was speaking to one of the kids there, Joshua, And he took me on a tour around the whole facility. He looks you in the eye. He shakes your hand. The soft skills on top of the technical skills is extremely, extremely important. You talk about a doer. He was already telling me, because he was in carpentry, I'm going to own my own business one day. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. It's not for everybody. But what are you seeing also? Are you seeing kids interested in the entrepreneurial route, or do they just kind of want to work for a company and just be a technician of some sort, or do they want to open up their own business? And is there support for that in any of the programs?
So the Ministry of Education had a three-year funding program on skilled trades entrepreneurship. In Skills Ontario, just this year in May at the provincial competition, we just hosted a provincial level skilled trades entrepreneurship event. We ended up having 900 people registered. It took off. So it's definitely out there and going. Lots of people want to be their own boss or have multiple facets. Now, definitely you still have to go through your apprenticeship and get licensed. And you can still learn that whether you jump right on board and do it. I had two members of Team Ontario, post-secondary students. They both want to own their own business. They want to be their own brand, make something for themselves, and be recognized and feel proud of themselves in that way. So I heard that from just two members of like 135. But there's lots of different avenues. But seeing the explosion of registration for the very first year that we held that program, I think speaks for itself.
The entrepreneur road is a whole different skill set that not necessarily is taught, but it's great that you actually have that type of program. And I remember, and I'm in a CEO group up here in the States, and there's about 20 different CEOs that I meet with every single month, and I actually have one tomorrow. And there was an individual in my group who actually was in the elevator trade, and he was just a tradesperson, and he would fix elevators in a family business. And all of a sudden, his father, who owned the elevator company, passed away, like literally just passed away. And he was kind of thrust into entrepreneurship. And that literally was a completely separate skill set that he had to learn and get into different programs and meet with mentors. And it was not easy for him to make that leap over to entrepreneurship. So it's not for everybody, but you need to have the support behind this. And programs like that definitely set kids up for success.
Yeah, like think about like a science fair. So we weren't doing the teaching, we were like a presentation opportunity. But it was an avenue, to be able to highlight and have a space for skilled trades entrepreneurship to be able to come and present and show themselves. And this was for secondary students.
Canada seems to be, again, I'm going to say it again, seems to be the model for, you know, what they're doing up there for skilled trades and supporting skilled trades. And you've got a ton of things going on. What else is coming down the pipeline for you?
Right now, thankfully, I'm in quotations quiet time right now. We just finished provincials. We just finished nationals. Summertime is about budget and projects. Again, being the most effective and efficient that we can be, it's going to be debriefs. How can we improve? What can we add? How can we make things easier? Doing an enhanced volunteer program. I noted 857 volunteers. That's just my department. That's just to run one event. What else can we do for them? They are the heart and soul of the Skills Ontario competition who make it happen, along with our staff and our sponsors and our partners. In September, we will be going to World Skills to Lyon, France, and supporting Team Canada. And then we start back up into the school year. So as an overall organization, we also offer summer camps all summer long. We have a Women in Trades program. We have a First Nation, Métis, and Inuit department. We have a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion department. We have one of North America's largest skilled trades traveling classroom called the Trades and Tech Truck. Our first one right now is 500 square feet that expands and has state-of-the-art welding simulators, painting simulators, crane simulator. It has a tire changing station. You name it, it's on there for skilled trades. We will bring the classroom to you if you don't have the classroom. You want to talk about exploration? Great. We will come to you. We will come to your open house. We will come to your event. We will come to your home show and bring the traveling classroom of state-of-the-art opportunities to learn about skilled trades. It was so loved in its first year that we applied for funding for three more, and they will be hitting the road at the beginning of this school year in September 2024. And we will have four now for the fleet across the province of Ontario to bring that out there. We've had a podcast. We have our competitions department. We have a lot of different offerings at Skills Ontario. We are the leader in the province on skilled trades exploration. But what's really great is that it's not just the four sectors of skilled trades. We also highlight technology, so computer-based opportunities like mechanical CAD, architecture, IT networking. And we also offer contests for the essential skills, both provincially and nationally. So there is a public speaking contest. There's a job skill demonstration contest. There's workplace safety that's integral to everything. We talked earlier about your dad accidentally hammering his thumb. That is a huge component, is PPE and safety and proper fitting. So we have a lot of offerings where they'll all kickstart again for the new school year between all the different departments.
How do people reach out to you? Is it best on social? Where are you predominantly on?
On LinkedIn, it can be easily reached out to on there. As well, if anyone is interested in Skills Ontario programmings, we do have an About Us page where you can contact the different managers or staff of all the different departments as well with our email addresses on our website at skillsontario.com.
Jennifer, it has been a pleasure learning about you, the programs. It's exciting to see what's going on up in Canada. And Jamie McMillan only sings your praises up there. And it's just wonderful to see. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you to our listeners, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool once again. We'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast.
Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.